Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of WN Movie Talk Podcast, the movie and film discussion podcast where it's a one-sided discussion because it's just me on my own. And it's also got the shittest title that any movie-related podcast has ever got. It's basically our email address is where the title come from. We need to talk about movies podcast originally, but we didn't realise at the time that someone else already had a podcast like that. We'd done a search before we created it. Found no name, no podcast with such a name until we had ours going. And then whenever you tried searching for our podcast online, we get somebody else's. Like, what? Never mind. Anyway, so now I am WN Movie Talk Podcast. I'm Trev. I'm your host. Anyway, tonight, enough of that moaning, me having a little bit of a whine. Tonight, I'm here to talk about The Muppets, or The Muppets from Space from 1999, which is the story about Gonzo on the search for his roots. Basically, he's looking for his family, and he's also being searched for from beings from outer space. Could they be related? So it's a funny film, really, The Muppets from Space. You know, the Muppets had just sort of been reinvented around this time. They had the new Muppet show called The Muppets Tonight. A lot of the characters in this movie come from The Muppets Tonight, so there's a lot of new characters in this film, some that catch on and some that don't. I think Pepe the Prawn is a king prawn, okay? He becomes a really important character throughout The Muppets from this point onwards. But like the host, was it called Floyd, the host? Like the dreadlock, sort of Bob Marley-looking purple thing. He was the host of The Muppets Tonight, and he's in this film, but he's sort of, apart from hosting a show, he's got nothing to bring, you know? So he sort of falls into the background fairly quick in this movie. And I think from here on in, you don't really see him in any other Muppet stuff from then on, really. I can't remember seeing him in much. So The Muppets, to me, it's my guilty pleasure. This film is my guilty pleasure. It's one of my favourite of the Muppet films. Obviously, the Muppet movie, the original Muppet movie, is amazing. Love that. And even, was it 2011 they redone The Muppets? That, to me as well, was a great returning film for the franchise. And I thought that done really well. It actually won an Oscar, didn't it, for Best Original Song, I think. So, yeah, there you go. The Muppets, they're still going now. They're on Disney Plus. They're not as good as they was. I don't know. They've done like their own Office-style comedy sitcom over there, didn't they, on Disney Plus? And I didn't think it was too bad. A lot of people really, really, really hate it. But then I have a bit of love for The Muppets, as I said. It's my guilty pleasure. I live in a house with three children and my wife. And all throughout the kids growing up, you know, I'd show them films that I grew up on, you know, and we watched stuff together. But whenever I've put The Muppets on, they all hate The Muppets. Everyone in my family hates The Muppets. So I really am on my own with my love for The Muppets. So there you go. Anyway, I do enjoy it. So I will get on to discuss The Muppets from Space in a bit. We'll go through that. But first of all, I will also like to talk a bit about the sort of the background of The Muppets and, you know, how The Muppets came about. Jim Henson, the creator, the path the sort of the Muppets have taken, and we'll take it from there. But I've also asked a question over on the Facebooks, and that question was, what are your cinematic guilty pleasures? Let's have a look now what you've said. Nathan Kent says, George of the Jungle for sentimental value. Maybe the first cinema trip that I remember. Yeah, George of the Jungle. That would be a guilty pleasure. We did watch that with the kids, actually. They quite enjoyed it. And I probably enjoyed it more than I should have, you know. I seem to have softened it with age, though. You know, I'm not as dismissive of films. Gwen Capra messaged and said, Carry On Screaming. This is a coincidence because I only just watched this. I think it was on Freevee not long ago, and I quite enjoyed it. I quite like watching the old comedies, and I try not to watch them going, oh, you could do that now. You could do that now, because I think the things we can't do now is pathetic. I think it's got too much, you know? Fucking, you want to watch a film to escape. But yeah, I could never imagine Carry On films, that franchise being revived in a modern day, you know? You couldn't do it. They're so sexist. They're so misogynistic. Some of them not very funny at all. Some of them, you know, quite enjoy. And I think that one was a bit tongue-in-cheek. It starred a chap out of Steptoe and Son. There's like a police inspector. He's sort of put in this haunted mansion to find this. I did enjoy it. I thought it's quite a good one. So yeah, I'm with you on that one, Gren. Next, Simon Viles has come in and said, The Ice Pirates, cheesy 80s sci-fi comedy. I've never heard of that, but I've just done a quick Google. It stars Robert Urich, Angelica Houston, and Ron Perlman's in there. 1984 film. And it says, in a distant future, scarce of water, space pirates get caught after stealing ice from a spaceship. They are sold to a princess looking for her dad. So it does sound cheesy. There was a lot of films sort of around that time, weren't there? Sort of trying to capitalise on the success of Star Wars and Return of the Jedi had just come out and that franchise had ended. There's a massive hole. There were films like Krull, The Last Starfighter. So a lot of cheesy space movies coming out. Low budget compared to Star Wars as well. But it did turn a profit by the looks of it. It was a budget of $9 million and it made $14.3 million at the box office. So not a complete failure. But yeah, I'll have to look out for that one, Simon. Maybe we do like a episode on these films. Everyone suggests some of these corny, awful films that no one likes and we'll just start watching through them. That would be a good segment for the podcast. Jack Stokes says, I love a stoner comedy. Harold and Kumar, Dude, Where's My Car? And the classic Jay and Silent Bob. Clerks, yeah. Well, they did do a Jay and Silent Bob film as well, didn't they? But I actually just picked up Dogma today on DVD, which is really hard to come by, and I've been looking for it for ages and found two copies of it. Not a stoner comedy, but it's Kevin Smith, isn't it? Jay and Silent Bob. Are they the two main dudes in it? I can't remember now. Another stoner comedy is Cheech and Chong. Never seen it. Up in Smoke. Here it's a classic. But I have seen a YouTube comedy, Need for Weed. It's, as I said to Jack on over at Facebook, I said, it's on YouTube, low budget, but the writer-director is sexy as fuck. He is. It took me a year to make that film. It's awful, really. It's good fun, but, oh my God, it's a continuity nightmare, if you ever want to check that out. Anyway, and then Mark Sanders said Flash Gordon. Still, yeah, I've not seen Flash Gordon for a long time. I was half expecting avid listener Jason Paris to pipe up with Flash Gordon. That seems to be his answer for everything. But there you go. That's our question of the week. Relevant question of the week over on Facebook. So thanks, everyone, for answering that. Good stuff. Anyway, should we get into the Muppets chat? So Jim Henson, he started his journey into the Muppets, a journey towards the Muppets in the 1950s. He attended the University of Maryland. And he began experimenting with puppets there, creating characters like Kermit the Frog. He was initially considering majoring in fine arts, but he found this puppetry course within the home economics list. So he just went for that. He decided that would be his major. You know, he didn't intend to make this name for himself. And I mean, the legacy that the bloke has left behind just is so far-reaching now. And, you know, he was just trying to earn a few quid using his puppets for adverts. And he started performing on TV with a twice nightly show called Sam and Friends. His first version of Kermit was made from a turquoise coat that his mother was getting rid of. He used a ping pong ball for the eyes. You can still sort of see that, can't you? Kermit's eyes, ping pong. He wasn't actually a frog at the time. He was more of a lizard. But he evolved and became more of a frog over the years. You know, changed the colour to green, gave him the little frilly collar and his pointy webbed feet. So, you know, Henson had got television exposure at first on a few local programmes. And throughout the 60s, he continued to sort of grow and expand his skill with puppetry. And he was also appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. So slowly but surely, he began to get more and more work coming in and started to put a bit of a team together around him. Now, Frank Oz is probably the most famous out of the Muppet team. He was 19 when he joined Henson in New York to work on the Muppets back in 1963. So the term Muppet, anyway, is a combination of the words marionette and puppet, which Henson created to describe his unique sort of brand of puppetry. Frank Oz it's also, you know, he became Henson's right-hand man, really, his closest collaborator. And he was a really important part of the development of the Muppets. Not only does he bring the characters of Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear, Grover, you know, don't forget Sesame Street as well, all to life. He would also go on later on to voice Yoda, as we all know, and become a film director as well. He's got some really good films under his belt, including Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which is, I think, might have been his first movie, or his first non-puppet movie, anyway. Jerry Jewell is another player in the Muppets. He was a writer and a puppeteer, and he helped to create the Muppets' humour, really. He collaborated closely with Henson on scripts and creative development. He helped come up with witty dialogue, clever wordplay, all that sort of, the Muppets would become renowned for. So a lot of the technical side was more to do with Henson, whereas Jerry Jewell was really helping them structure what they had and sort of zero in on their style of comedy. He'd help sort of grow these little simple puppet characters to have real personalities and sort of almost backstories. But I mean, he added so much depth and complexity to these characters that still to this day, those characters, you know the characters, you know, not just, oh, look, that's Miss Piggy. You know, oh, that's Miss Piggy. She's full of herself. She thinks she's the most beautiful thing in the world. She's good at kung fu. She's got a bit of a temper, you know. Kermit, he's a nice guy. He's trying to hold the whole gang together. You know, so there's this background to these characters that wouldn't have happened without Jerry Jewell. Now, Jerry Jewell had actually written the first draft of Muppets from Space, and he wasn't all that happy with how the script ended up either. I did find a quote somewhere. Let me try and find it. He wrote, "I wrote a very parody-heavy script. We parodied Men in Black, Contact, Alien, and we were very close to shooting. Then I got a panic call saying that they were firing the director, but we got the green light. We're going." So they picked a new director. He did a decent job, but he wanted to get rid of all the parody stuff and the ending. I hate the ending. My draft, the aliens were getting the signal of old Muppet shows and they made themselves look like Gonzo because he was the ultimate being. They peel back to reveal themselves to be these hideous creatures. And it's not about family being those guys. His family is the Muppets. So he's still a whatever. He's not an alien in the end. So the fact that they made him an alien bugs the crap out of me. So Jerry Jewell not happy, even though I've said that I love this film. I always felt the same. We don't need to know where Gonzo came from. It's like the Alien prequels, isn't it? Alien Covenant, Prometheus. We don't need to know where Alien comes from because it ruins that mythos, doesn't it? It ruins that ambiguity. And the same with Gonzo. So the fact that he turns out to be an alien, even though I enjoyed the film, the ending as well, it does. We don't need Gonzo to be an alien. And I agree with Jerry Jewell there. And then the other bloke was Don Sarlin. He's a puppet builder and designer who worked closely with Henson. I think he was the one who sort of made all the mechanics behind the Muppets. So Henson would say, "I want a Muppet that does this," and he would do that, and he would create these Muppets with amazing facial expressions. Because even like watching the Muppets from Space tonight, the eyes of these puppets is just amazing. There's a scene where Gonzo's driving around on a lawnmower in the middle of the night, and he just looks crazy. His eyes just look really wide and crazy. There's another bit where the bear, it's like puts his eyes in this retina scanner and it like flashes his bright lights into his eyes. And when he comes out, his eyes look like the pupils are really dilated. And even though they're not actually doing anything, he looks like he's staring into like he can't see. It's just amazing how the performances of the Muppets convey so much through these felt eyes with eyebrows that raise up and down. And a lot of the technology they created for these films has become a massive thing it's changed and helped to sculpt the world of cinema as well. We use animatronics devised from the Jim Henson's Creature Shop in a whole range of movies, and the technologies that they helped create. So just, yeah, it's there's a lot more to the Muppets than people like to think, you know. I think they're brilliant. I think Jim Henson's a legend. Other performers are Richard Hunt, Dave Goels. Hunt is known for characters like Scooter, Beaker, and Statler of Statler and Waldorf. I think Henson played Waldorf originally till he passed away. Goels played Gonzo, Dr. Bunce, and Honeydew. So, yeah, they're the main ones. And Goels, obviously, Dave Goels, he plays Gonzo. He was originally hired just as a puppeteer, and eventually he was given like characters to voice here and there, but he didn't really like doing it. And then when they created Gonzo, who turned up in a few like little shows before the Muppet Show, as this sort of sad looking character, and he had to do the voice for him, and he didn't know how to do the voice. But I mean, now you listen to Gonzo and he's just one of the greatest. He narrates the Christmas Carol, you know, he becomes Dickens. So, you know, the bloke, he earned his stripes in the end, didn't he? So these early days of collaboration laid the foundation for the Muppets' success, basically. Established Jim Henson as this visionary artist storyteller. And with his gang of puppeteers, they set about creating Sesame Street. So, I mean, this was amazing when I was a kid. That's another reason I love the Muppets. I loved Sesame Street. Every lunchtime, the Sesame Street would be on. Sesame Street, it's an iconic children's television program. It's had a profound impact on American culture and educational media. It debuted in 1969. And it just became this worldwide phenomenon. It was designed to provide preschoolers with a fun and engaging educational experience whilst addressing social and emotional needs of young children. It was an innovative educational format. It revolutionised children's television by blending entertainment with education in a format that was both engaging and effective. You know, I can still remember how to count to 12 now because of Sesame Street. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. See? So it had puppetry, animation, live action segments, music. It created this vibrant and immersive learning environment. It was captivating to young viewers. It addressed issues of race, ethnicity, disability, but it never felt preachy. I would watch this as a child and sort of feel this understanding of these different cultures. So after the success of Sesame Street, and then it was like another 7 years before they premiered The Muppet Show. And instantly, that became this massive global phenomenon. And it's what launched the Muppets to this iconic status that they, well, maybe they don't have it as much now. Like most things, they've sort of lived their time, I think, you know. But they were iconic. The Muppet Show ran for 6 years. And they had celebrity guest after celebrity guest. But they was told that no celebrity guest was ever allowed to appear more than once. Guest stars on The Muppet Show could request to appear in a... Came out in Miss Piggy was the most frequently requested. Animal, a close second. But then it was after The Muppets that came out, then The Muppet Movies. So the first Muppet movie, it's a musical comedy. And I must say, the music in The Muppet Movie is absolutely brilliant. Not just the Rainbow Connection that he sings at the beginning, but there's some real funky tracks in there. Moving Right Along, that he sings along with Fozzie when they're on the road. It's a great tune. That came on at a free party once we was at. It was at a rave. And then as the sun come up and they started to play a bit more mellow music. And then someone put on Moving Right Along by Fozzie Bear and Kermit. And it went down a storm. But I think I was like one of four people there who knew all the words to it. And anyway. My favourite song from the Muppet movie is Can You Picture That? Sung by Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem as they sort of paint up Fozzie Bear's Scootervaker so that Fozzie and Kermit can escape the clutches of the evil Doc Hopper. The film is a timeless classic. And it's sort of like the origin story of the Muppets before origin stories were ten a penny as well. But it's a really great film. It's some great cameos in it from people such as Steve Martin. Richard Pryor, I think, was in that, or was he in one of the others? I think he's in that one. Mel Brooks, Orson Welles. Yeah, loads of people turning up in that. But they sort of all meet along the way. You know, you meet Kermit first and he's going to Hollywood to make millions of people happy. That's what he wants to do. And then he meets Fozzie Bear and then they meet Gonzo. And as they keep going, they meet more and more of the Muppets until there's like hundreds of them. Interesting fact about the Muppet movie, that in the opening scene where they're all in the cinema, there's so many puppeteers, they needed like hundreds of people to operate all these Muppets. Tim Burton actually operates one of the Muppets in there, in case you wondered. There you go, little fact. So, yeah, Gonzo is one of the main characters in the Muppet movie. He's one of the main characters in the Muppet show as well. Gonzo the Great. So I think it's only right that he got his own film eventually. So Gonzo, in case you're not up to date with the Muppets, if you're not, you're probably not even listening to this, but he's a blue long-nosed creature of indeterminate species, adding to his enigmatic and otherworldly persona. His distinct appearance sets him apart from other Muppet characters and adds to the charm and appeal. Exactly. That's what we were discussing earlier. As a character, Gonzo is known for his boundless creativity, eccentricity and fearlessness. He has a penchant for danger, doesn't he? He likes to get into his, he likes getting shot through things, and anything that's dangerous, he's there, you know. If he's going to get hurt, he's going to enjoy it. And then he always has this chicken, Camilla. Love interest with Camilla the chicken. Very strange character. So after the Muppet movie, you know, which pushed sort of the innovation one step further again, getting the Muppets up on film, they had to devise ways of filming them in real life locations and hiding the puppeteers. I mean, there's a great shot of Kermit on the bike, and I remember watching that thinking, how did they do that as a child? You know, probably easy. It's probably just like a remote controlled bike. I don't know, but I never did get the bit where the steamroller rolls over him and he jumps off the bike and lands on top of the steamroller. But when the steamroller goes away, the bike is sticking out of the ground. Would it not be rolled flat? I always wonder that. Anyway, so yeah, the next film was The Great Muppet Caper in 1981. Now, this didn't it star Charles Grodin? Wasn't he the villain in that? I never really watched The Muppet Caper. I have seen it. I've seen all the Muppet movies, but I've never gone back to them. And whenever I do start watching them, they're not as funny. I think, is it The Muppet Caper or The Muppets Take Manhattan, where they first feature the Muppet babies? Where I think Miss Piggy has a dream about her and Kermit being babies, and that's where the Muppet babies came from. So they start off as Muppet puppets in this film, and then, of course, they bring out a cartoon after that. The cartoon I used to love. I used to always parody movies, and I'm a movie nerd, as you know, so I used to love watching that each week, seeing what films got parodied next. There's a new Muppets Babies on Disney, and I watched that with my daughter thinking, oh, that might be good. It's absolute shit. It's not as appealing. It's more for babies than film nerds, so I'm against it. So The Great Muppet Caper was more of a caper, wasn't it? It was, rather than an origin story, this is just a sort of a film on its own, and I think it was like a jewel heist or something, and you know, that's how it goes, isn't it? Very similar to sort of the 1-2 of the Muppet movie, and The Great Muppet Caper is very similar to The Muppets and The Muppets Most Wanted. All those years later, when The Muppets came out, it felt more like a Muppet movie than anything I'd seen before. And then the second one, Ricky Gervais is in it, and that becomes a bit more of a crime caper again, with the evil Kermit. Yeah, I didn't think the second Muppets Most Wanted was as good as the first one again, and sort of lost interest a bit. Then after The Great Muppet Caper, there's Muppets Take Manhattan. That was 1984, but that was part owned, I think, by Sony. Now, I think Sony released Muppets Take Manhattan, Muppets from Space, and that is why you can't find either of those films on Disney Plus, which now owns the Muppets. I mean, Muppets and Disney sort of made sense for them to merge, you know, because the Muppets hold a lot of sort of the sensibilities of Disney. I think the Muppets being acquired by Disney was a good call, but I think Disney in this last sort of 10 years was just lost it. And they're just ruining everything that they touch at the moment. It seems to be a bit of a shame. And also watching Muppets from Space, it made me realise that whenever you watch a Disney film now, whether it's a Pixar film or a cartoon or a live action movie, anything that's been made in the last sort of 5 years, especially, everything doesn't just have a theme that they're trying to hammer home. It's all about that. You know, it's just everything is too preachy these days, and it drives me nuts. And I was watching the Muppets from Space, and I was expecting them to sort of make a big thing about Gonzo. You know, he's made out to be mental. He's driving around wrapped in tinfoil, sort of saying, oh, you know, my cereal told me to sit on the roof. They're all thinking he's nuts, but they don't make an issue out of it. It's not like, oh, this is how to deal with mental health. We don't care when we're watching a film. We just want to escape. I don't care if people are offended. Let's just watch a film, forget about life. We don't need this all drummed into us with every film we watch. And it's just getting a bit ridiculous now. There's no escapism. Everything is, yeah, have some morals shoved in your face. Yeah, just have some fun. Where's the fun gone? So anyway, Disney bought the Muppets. So the 80s then, the film's already underway, but Henson decided he wanted to start making more interesting movies. So films came out like The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. I could never get into The Dark Crystal. As a child, it used to weird me out a bit. I didn't like it. Labyrinth, I loved as a child, and some of the effects in that are great. My kids love Labyrinth. My wife loves Labyrinth. And then Henson passed away in 1990. His children and longtime collaborators continued to manage the company and uphold his creative legacy. And then after that, 1992, Jim Henson's son Brian directed the first film produced after Jim Henson's death, and that was The Muppets Christmas Carol. So that's the first Disney Muppets movie. And, you know, that's a classic. I don't know, you might have heard my Christmas Carol podcast earlier in the year or at Christmas. That's when it would have been, the end of last year. I'm a massive fan of The Christmas Carol, Dickens. It's one of my favourite works of Dickens. That and David Copperfield. So that was how they sort of went for a while. They started taking on old literature. So next they'd done, in 1996, The Muppets Treasure Island. And this had Tim Curry in it. But I didn't really take to this one. I sort of lost interest a bit. But when Muppets from Space come out, I think I even went to the cinema to watch Muppets from Space. I thought the advert looked awesome. Gonzo is one of my favourite puppets, as I said. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And then I got it on DVD and we'd watch it a lot. And this was at a time when we was raving by about this time, you know. I just left school 96. So I was probably about 19, 20 at the time when this came out. We'd watch it in the flats. We'd come back from a rave and we'd often stick Muppets from Space on and watch it, you know. So it's just a lot going on in it that sort of appealed to me and my friends, and it was a bit wacky and a bit zany. Anyway, that's my introduction to the Muppets. Did you like that? I've talked for bloody ages about it, and I hope it was interesting for you. But now I'm going to discuss the movie, The Muppets from Space. So, as I said, The Muppets from Space came about at a time when The Muppets had had a bit of a relaunch. The Muppets Tonight Show had just recently come out. A lot of the characters, as I said, from Muppets Tonight move over to Muppets from Space. But it didn't last for long. It wasn't as phenomenal as when The Muppets first came about back in the 70s. The Muppets from Space, so marks, it's the sixth feature film outing for the Muppets. And it differs from the predecessors because its focus is, as I said, on Gonzo. He's the central character and it has this science fiction film. There's also no sort of self-written music. All the other Muppet films have film music written specifically for the film, whereas The Muppets from Space, it's just all funk and soul soundtrack. And it's brilliant. Another thing that I found appealing, I guess. The Muppets from Space at the time received mixed reviews from critics and audiences. Some appreciated its humour and charm, like myself, and the performance of the Muppets characters. I've found the plot to be thin and the humour lacking compared to previous Muppet film. However, it's still found a dedicated fan base, particularly young audiences and Muppet enthusiasts like me. It was, I think, to me, why it was so appealing. It's because it was sort of off the wall. There was a lot of, not adult humour, I don't know, it's just a bit more crazy, a bit more anarchic than a lot of the Muppets, and not so sentimental. There's a few moments of sentimentality in there, but I don't know, I think focusing on Gonzo and not on Kermit, because Kermit is a bit of a wet character, isn't he, really, you know? He's a bit of a drip, and he's so lovely and chummy that it just, oh, it's cringy after a while. Because let's face it, you know, Kermit, he might have been sort of the front man, the centre of the Muppets, you know, but he was wet. And in this film, he's got to a point where he's serving a purpose, but he's not the centre of attention. So they do start shifting the focus onto different creatures. So Gonzo's the ideal choice because he's quite bizarre. And I think after the success of Rizzo and Gonzo in Muppets Christmas Carol, that, you know, people want to see more. So I think that's why they, you know, focus more on that in this film. Also, Fozzie Bear in this film is just immature. He's not as funny. I don't know. He starts to stop being funny and being annoying in this film, certainly. And, you know, over the years, he's become one of my least favourite of the Muppet characters. So I think just seeing it from the Gonzo perspective, and again, Gonzo and Rizzo the Rat, they had such a good camaraderie in the Muppets Christmas Carol that, again, here, they're roommates in the house. At the beginning, you see the Muppets, they all live in this house, and then they got the song Brick House over the top of this montage. It's absolutely brilliant. Cool, just a great start to a Muppet film. But yeah, you get Rizzo the Rat, the banter between him and Gonzo is just brilliant. And then later on, as Gonzo's going off on his own little like storyline, Rizzo the Rat then starts hanging around with Pepe the prawn, the king prawn, and he becomes a character in himself in this movie. He just steals the show in a lot of places, a lot of his humor. A few production notes and trivia that I've researched here. The film was the first to employ a technique used in every major Muppet production since, where the puppets' arm rods are digitally removed in post-production. The director, Randall Kleiser, was supposed to direct the film. He directed films such as Grease and Flight of the Navigator. But as that interview with Jerry Jewell earlier, Randall Kleiser was dropped and they got in that other young director. Tim Hill, he's basically done a lot of this sort of thing. He's done a SpongeBob film. He's done Alvin and the Chipmunks. Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties, you know. So it's a lot of that sort of stuff that he's done, really. So that's the career he's carved for himself. And he's also done the Grandpa film with De Niro. What one was that? The War with Grandpa. Never seen it. I know De Niro likes to think he's good at, he likes his comedies, but oh my God, isn't he just not the De Niro of the 70s at all, is he? It's a shame. Anyway, let's get back on the trivia. This is the last movie to have Frank Oz's direct involvement. Oz was not available for most of the production, so substitute puppeteers performed his character and Oz dubbed the voices during post-production. The Muppets from Space. I'm going to talk you now through the plot of the film. We'll go through it step by step. It opens with this great scene, which it just looks cinematic as well. And it's of, there's Gonzo. You see him walking along like a desert or something. And it's, you see this big boat and all these animals lining in. It's Noah and the Ark. And the first cameo of the film, F. Murray Abraham playing Noah in this scene. Gonzo's like trying to get on the ark. Noah stops him. He's like, what are you? He's like, well, I'm a whatever. And he won't let him on because there's only one of him. But he gives him this tiny little umbrella. You may need this. So then he wakes up and he sees he's had a nightmare. And he wakes up, I don't want to be alone. And he sort of wakes up next to Rizzo. And he says to Rizzo, I've just had that really weird dream again. And Rizzo goes, oh, what? You mean the one with the goat, the dwarf, and the jar of peanut butter? It's jokes like that that I think, you know, they work on a new level, don't they? The kids would be like, oh, I don't get that. Whereas we're like, instantly, grown-ups, teenagers, your mind goes to the most filthy place, doesn't it? So then we see the montage anyway, brick house. It's this crazy house. There's Muppets all over it, all living together under one roof. There's the old butler going around looking for his false teeth. Penguins diving into the bath off of diving boards. The shrimps taking a bath in the sink. You see Rizzo the rat, he's pumping iron on a mouse trap. He's using a mouse trap as a, like, say, pushes it, the pressure's pushing it back. But he's pumping iron, going, I'm doing this for you, ladies. And he's underneath a poster of the Mice Girls. So, obviously, Spice Girls was big around this time. You see Gonzo then, he's looking at the photos, and there's photos of Fozzie Bear and his family and Miss Piggy and her relations. And then you see this photo of Gonzo, and it's this wide-angle shot of the beach. And Gonzo's just like tiny little speck in the middle of the beach, signifying that he's alone. Symbolism, isn't it? But then it's when he tips his cereal out. He's got this alphabet cereal, and it spells, watch the skies. And it's his first clue of these... first of all, it says, are you there? And he's like, hey, my cereal's talking to me. And then it says, watch the sky. Now, watch the sky was the original title, or the working title, for Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which is like Jerry Jewell earlier saying they had this parody heavy script. There's a few scenes in this that sort of parody or refer to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, but not a lot of the other films sort of survived. So Gonzo, he thinks he's receiving messages from his breakfast cereal, and there's a scene where they're all sat around and they're like, where's Gonzo? I think it's Rizzo the rat says, his breakfast cereal told him to go sit on the roof. And then Floyd, who was the sort of dreadlocked raster host of the Muppets today, he says, talk about whole grain and nut. And that's what I mean about this film. Not pampering to the mental health issue and all that. I don't know if it was such a big thing back then. But, you know, Kermit, you know, is concerned because that's Kermit. But everyone else is, you know, completely taking the piss and setting Gonzo up for things. And I just think that's brilliant. It's the sort of a thing I miss these days. We just pander to everyone. Mental health is, you know, yes, it is a serious issue, but we don't need it drummed down our throat with every time a film is made, you know? We don't need these issues thrust at us. We just want entertainment. That's what I miss from everything these days. Anyway, then we meet Jeffrey Tambor as a K. Edgar Singer, based on J. Edgar Hoover. So he's K. Edgar instead of J. Edgar. So Singer instead of Hoover. Both brands of household appliances. Don't Singer do like sewing machines and stuff? So that's where they got that name from. Now, Jeffrey Tambor, I think he's great in this. He embellishes the role. He plays a good villain. He plays a good bastard, doesn't he? Arrested Development. You can't get a better bastard than him in that. Tambor plays the head, like the lead guy at Covenet, which is this secret sort of national security facility, and focusing on the search for aliens. He's obsessed with aliens as well. And his obsession sort of has been noted by the general, played by Pat Hingle, who's coming in to have a look around. He's inspecting the place at the beginning. And we realise that Jeffrey Tambor at this point is on sort of thin ice. But he's accompanied by the bear. Rentro the bear is a strange name for the bear, but he's this big puppet bear, and I just think he's great against Jeffrey Tambor. Jeffrey Tambor's like this short temper, short fuse, and this bear is just sort of so pleasant and nice. They just complement each other so well. The jokes just run thick and fast between them. So we see Pat Hingle, who plays Commissioner Gordon in the Batman movies. He is like this general, and he's coming in to have a look at Covenet. And I think he wants to shut it down, really. The meeting doesn't go that well. And as Jeffrey Tambor is sort of left, sort of huffing and puffing, and then the bear comes over and taps him on the shoulder, and then realises that he's, because he's eating honey sandwiches, he's got honey all over the shoulder. And it's just, the way the bear always trying to be nice and do the right thing, but he always ends up sort of putting his foot in it somehow, but he's sort of bashful about it. I don't know. I can't explain it. Watch the fucking film. You'll enjoy him, I'm sure. So the scene with Gonzo on the roof, anyway, he's looking up and then he gets struck by lightning. And this is a great shot because as he gets struck by lightning, it freeze frames. And then the camera moves into the photo, but the photo moves as well. And it's like almost like the Matrix sort of effect. But it just looks really great. And this is like early CGI. There's a bit of CGI throughout the film. Some of it's a bit more effective than others. But I do really like this shot. And I remember I loved it. And then when it came on tonight and I watched it again, I thought, no, it still looks good. It's a decent enough shot. Some of the CGI, you know, this was probably the cheaper end of the CGI for films such as this. But it does its job. It's just a Muppet film, isn't it? So then Gonzo is struck by lightning and then he's propelled into space. And it's got a funky backing track. It's a Shining Star by the Dust Brothers. And he's like floating through space and he meets these space fish, cosmic knowledge fish. And they tell him, what do they tell him? They basically tell him that his people are trying to reach out to him. And then as he sort of hears that information and they send him back to Earth and bye, nice to meet you. Thanks for the cosmic knowledge. Just silly little lines like that. I just find hilarious through this film. So then he gets back. His eyes, as I said, the eyes, I love the eyes. But in this is the scene where he's like frazzled and burnt to a crisp. And his eyes are just, they're glowing as well. They're like glowing red. And he just looks mad as he's laughing manically. And then he gets on the lawnmower and he starts writing like a message to the aliens. And all the while he's on the lawnmower to get up off of that thing by James Brown. Another funky track. It's just funky track after funky track here. So Rizzo and Pepe, they're watching Gonzo thinking he's nuts. But then when he's asleep, they sort of pretend to make this alien voice. And Pepe says, if you build it, they will come, okay? But in this alien voice, basically tells him to build a jacuzzi. So then Gonzo wakes up and builds a jacuzzi. And the Muppets all throw this big party around this jacuzzi, which Gonzo's throwing for his family. But there's these two characters in there, Johnny and Sal. So Johnny's like this sort of crooner. And he appeared in the new Muppet show, The Muppets Tonight. And Sal is this like monkey that he has beside him. And they're there like eating the food. Oh, it's good food. You should try this. What is that? The cake? Oh, look, lovely cake. And then Gonzo turns up and is like, who set the cake? And these two, Johnny and Sal, like looking over. I don't believe it. I don't believe someone's done that. Why would do that? Who would do such a thing? And they're acting so innocently guilty. It's brilliant. It's irreverent comedy, isn't it? So now the story sort of carries on quicker now. We meet, there's a program on the telly hosted by Shelley Snipes, played by Andy McDowell. It's called UFO Mania Live. They're looking for people who have been abducted or in contact with aliens. And Gonzo, dressed in his tinfoil hat and wrapped in tinfoil, drives his lawnmower to the studio. And we also find out that this is where Miss Piggy is working. At first, we think she's a news broadcaster. She's reading the news. And then we realise that she's just in Andy McDowell's changing rooms and she's supposed to be delivering coffees. She's basically a coffee pig. But as Andy McDowell's not back from the airport, Piggy steps in and reads this broadcast, which Gonzo then turns up at. And he steals the show. He's telling about his aliens and he becomes this phenomenon and everyone loves him. The producer of the show, played by Rob Schneider, he basically gets Piggy manages to persuade him to give her a job if she gets the Gonzo story, basically, the follow-up story. So he does. He gives her Andy McDowell's job. And there's this great scene where she runs into the house. Because at this TV studio, then the Men in Black characters sort of turn up, government officials, and they take Gonzo and Rizzo with them. But obviously they're the bad guys working under Jeffrey Tambor. But there's this scene where Piggy runs into the house and she's like, I have great news, everyone. Gonzo has been abducted by the government and it could be a life-threatening situation. And everyone's like, oh, why is that good? She's like, because I've got to, I get to cover the story. So, yeah, typical Piggy. But, yeah, so it sort of From here on, it goes into a bit of an action film parody, which it isn't as strong as the opening half, as I said. There's still some great bits in it I enjoy. But it starts off with Dr. Bunsen Honeydew and Beaker. They're playing like the Q character and they're supplying these gadgets. A rubber duck filled with invisibility spray. A door in a jar. Then out comes, you know, the corny joke. Oh, what is this? Fozzie Bear asks. Is this a secret communication device? Basically, no, it's Dr. Bunsen Burns says, no, that's sellotape. But then for Miss Piggy, he has this Muppet Mad Mind Mist, which he says to Piggy, if you spray this on any subject, they will obey your every command. And she's like, I doubt I need it. The next cameo we see, or the next cameo I recognise, there could be cameos in this that I don't know who the people are. I'm sure they are. I'm sure the Men in Black sort of character that Miss Piggy has a kung fu fight with. She's got to have an obligatory kung fu fight in every Muppet movie. I'm sure he was a celebrity as well, but I didn't know who he was. I didn't recognise him. Must be off some American TV programme. But the next one is when Rizzo the Rat and Gonzo arrive at Covenet. Jeffrey Tambor's interviewing them. And then he's like, oh, we'll get rid of the rat. He's going to put him down to the lab for testing. And Hulk Hogan turns up to get rid of the rat. And that's it. It's just another one of those cameos where he starts talking to the camera. Oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do... And Jeffrey Tambor's like, just take him. Cuts his wrestling mantra short. So then the rats, his other rat is put in with the other rats in the medical facility. And this is almost like, you know, it becomes then a little prison film parody. And he meets the boys. And I love the rats because they all got these Brooklyn accents. The main guy, the fat rat in a wife beater, says, yeah, I'm Bob. And these are the boys. Fast Eddie, Troy, Shakes, and the Birdman. And Shakes is like this nervous rat shaking. And then the Birdman is there calling to the birds. And it's very similar to, I guess, the Birdman of Alcatraz and the bloke in Shawshank Redemption. But basically this pigeon comes over. This is like a full-size real-life pigeon, the same size as the rat, and starts jumping all over the puppet. And he's like, not in front of the others. But the rat's always good fun. They're great fun. Kermit and the gang then sort of set off in the Electric Mayhem bus, driving to Gonzo's rescue. And Kermit gives this good speech, which he ends with, you know, we'll never leave one of our own behind. And then someone's like, where's Dr. Bunsen and Beaker? And then Fozzie's like, oh, we've left them at the gas station. They're shit jokes, but I love them. David Arquette next then as the lab technician who takes a lot of pride in mistreating these rats in the labs, threatening them with the maze. And then you see this montage of the rats going through all this stuff, the maze. Rizzo is enjoying all these other tests as well as the maze. He's like, food or poison? Food or poison? Huh. Well, that's a no-brainer. It's got to be the food. And then as he goes to the food, he gets a boxing glove, comes in on a spring, punches him off the screen. Then you see him in a wind tunnel, getting blown in this wind tunnel. And then you see him in a rat-sized centrifuge, sort of being pushed around, like testing his G-force. What are they testing in this facility? I do not know. I just do not know. Next cameo then we see is Ray Liotta as the guard on the main gate of Covenet as Kermit and are hiding behind the bushes trying to get in. Miss Piggy's like, leave this to me, guys. And she goes over and basically, look into my eyes and tell me I can go in. He's like, what are you on about, lady? You can't go in. So her charm doesn't work, so she does need the mist, so she sprays it, and then Ray Liotta's like, oh yeah, cool, go through, and they all go through. And then once they're in there, they use the invisibility duck which they squirt over them, and then they can go and hide. Walk through the corridors undetected until Fozzie goes to the toilet and washes his hands, and then his hands are floating around. But then as the sort of invisibility cloak wears off, you see Fozzie Bear's picking his nose. Miss Piggy's eating. and then the shrimp is dressed as a ballerina. Back in the days when cross-dressing was funny, which, how would you know where your clothes were when you're invisible? Doesn't really work. It's a bit of a lame joke, one for the kids, I suppose, but it doesn't make sense. There's no logic in it. Actually, yeah, I can't watch a film. It's ridiculous. Then Gonzo is about to have his brain sucked out of his head by Dr. Van Neuter. He's this puppet brain surgeon. He's really creepy looking, sort of green, pale thing. He's got these like beady little eyes, which are behind like blue swimming goggles for some reason. And he's got all these weird pre-op questions like, do you have any ache in your tentacles? Has your head ever come off? And then, do you suffer from gingivitis? Then we cut back to the corridors and the Muppets are dressed as doctors now, and Kermit's on the shoulders of Miss Piggy and Fozzie Bear is carrying the prawn. So you see, but they're all hidden in doctor's suits. So you've got Kermit's head and the prawn's head coming out of the doctor's suits. And then doctors walk past and they go, doctor, 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 I'm a doctor, okay, doctor. And that's based on a similar scene in Spies Like Us, which John Landis film. I mentioned John Landis the other week, episode about American Werewolf in London. He very often features Frank Oz. So there's a link there between Spies Like Us, which featured Frank Oz, and this film here, in which they're sort of sending up that scene. There's this scene in Spies Like Us, isn't it, where they go into the tent and they're introduced to the doctor and they're all like, doctor, doctor. Doctor, doctor. Terry Gilliam's in that scene, isn't he? But then Rizzo the Rat turns up. You see him as Gonzo's being questioned. You see Rizzo the Rat coming out through the air ducts. Because at this point, Rizzo has escaped. He's dug a hole through the wall, hidden behind his Spice Girls poster, his Mice Girls poster. So there's that Shawshank Redemption link again there. As Rizzo the Rat and the other Muppets all enter the room to rescue Gonzo pretty much at the same time. And then all hell breaks loose. And there's a big kerfuffle. And then Jeffrey Tambor is walking to the room with Pat Hingle again as the general. And he's like, oh, think big. Think with a big mind. Behold the irrefutable evidence of extraterrestrial life. And then as he lifts up the blinds, it's a scene reminiscent to Independence Day. There's like the screen is just filled with smoke. And then you see the doctor just slam up against the thing and says, please release me. And then Jeffrey Tambor's character's like, oh, okay, so there's a dangerous alien on the loose. And Pat Hingle basically just sacks him there and then. So then he goes on he's on a mission just to kill Gonzo, put an end to it, really. And then they go into the end scene is basically the beach scene. Where Gonzo, by now, he's had new instructions. The bear brings him a sandwich and the aliens communicate to him through the sandwich. And they've said, basically, they want to meet you. We'll meet you tonight at midnight. And he says, okay, meet me at the beach. So then after they all escape from the Covenant, which incidentally, the Covenant exterior shots is all filmed on location at Screen Gems Studio, which is the studio where they filmed this film, and also the Elmer movie or something like that. Elmer is not one of my favourite Muppets, to be honest. So the end scene, there's more cameos. This is where we finally meet Andy McDowell. She has a bit of a bitch fight with Miss Piggy before Miss Piggy sprays her and gets her to make coffee for everyone. Kelly Holmes and another chap from Dawson's Creek turn up, but not Dawson. I'm sure I've missed another cameo somewhere, but, plenty of people loving to come into the Muppets, don't they? They all, that sounds weird, loving the opportunity to be on the Muppets. The Muppets and the Simpsons, I think celebrities sort of queue up to get on there, don't they? So as they're all sat there, it becomes this like big festival. And I love it that there's this character, Miss Piggy, is getting ready to do the interview on the telly. And there's this character off in the background. So it looks like he's a character designed to look like he's a bewildered member of the public behind the camera. People always look quite gormless when they're like there with their big cheesy grin behind the camera when they're being like in the background on the news report or something. This character has been designed like that, and he's got this sort of this big bulbous head with like tight curly hair on top. He wears his big glasses and he's got this big sort of cheesy grin with no top lip, and he's just hovering around behind her, and it just creases me up every time. But then, the aliens arrive. You see this cloud sort of spewing from space, and I thought that was quite impressive little CGI bit. As this like metallic egg comes down, you think it's this huge spaceship, and then it lands at the feet of everyone. It's tiny, and then Gonzo's like, "Oh, they must be really small." But then the egg opens up, and it's a beam which goes up to sort of. It's a landing beacon, basically, for the mothership. And then the mothership comes down, and like Close Encounters, it comes down, it's a bit of a dome, and then it revolves as it lands. And then when it lands, out come the Muppets. Lots of different Gonzos. They shoot him up into space in a cannon, and then he comes down and crashes through the floor. And everyone has this massive party to celebrate good times. Come out! That's basically nearly the end of the film. Until Tambor arrives, he's about to kill everyone. He's got this massive big gun. And as everyone starts laughing at him, and he's like, "Don't laugh at me." He has this thing about people laughing at him. And then he goes to shoot, and it's like, weapon is not loaded. And then you see the bear, he's took the ammo out. He saved the day. But will Gonzo leave with his new family, or will he stay? Yeah, of course he will stay. He's a Muppet. He stays with the Muppets. It's pointless. Pointless film. Just some great bits in it. Just something I enjoy about it. Tried to get my daughter to watch it with me, and she just sort of walked in and walked out again. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, do we need a Gonzo legacy story? Do we need to think Gonzo's an alien? I don't think we do. The ambiguity of it all was what made it appealing. I wish it'd stop trying to explain things. Things, you know, like I said, they're doing it with the alien films as well. And it just, it's enough. Enough is enough, isn't it? All this shit. Just leave things lie, isn't it? If something works, don't alter it. But, you know, ultimately, this film is sort of almost a forgotten Muppet movie in amongst the Muppet movies. I know they've done quite a lot of TV movies. The Muppets, Wizard of Oz and stuff like that has come out. None of which, they don't really get released to the cinema now, do they? After The Muppets Most Wanted, I think, was the last time a Muppet film hit the cinema. I think there's a Muppets Haunted Mansion based on the Disney ride. I don't know. I enjoy it. I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking. I wouldn't say it's an amazing film. It's not Citizen Kane, but if you like The Muppets and you haven't seen The Muppets from Space, I recommend having a look at it. It's all right, really. Bit of fun, isn't it? But, yeah, I think that's about all I've got time for. I've got nothing else to say on the subject. So, if you have stuck with me through The Muppets from Space, thank you ever so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And, more films to come soon. So, yeah, if you want to get in touch with us at all, please come on over to Facebook, because that's where I ask all the questions of the week and things, you know. So it'd be good for you to come and find WN Movie Talk Podcast over on Facebook.com. We're also on Instagram, don't do a lot on there. Or if you want to email me and suggest a film to discuss or theme or anything, you know, just anything, then it's WNMovieTalk@gmail.com. It's simple, isn't it? But anyway, that's it for now. So, until next time, thank you all for listening, everyone, and I will see you all again soon. Chase!